Welcome to What We Really Want, Conversations About Connection, brought to you by Awaken. We're a gospel-based 12-step recovery community, and we're dedicated to helping people live the lives they were created for. So settle in and get ready for a great conversation. Let's talk about what we really want.
What, did you just use your shoulder to do that?
Yeah, I did.
Do it again.
I mean,
I've... closer to the mic, though.
Okay.
that was a shoulder and ear and neck thing.
Yeah, man.
Wow. Like, now that's all I want to talk about.
One of God's greatest gifts.
Andy Gullihorn and Gabe Scott.
Hello.
Hi. When you have a conversation with these two, it's going to go where it goes. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be.
Guys, we're going to have a fun conversation, and I want to start it out by asking what I always do and just get you to say, what do you really want out of this conversation this morning?
We're allowed to be honest?
Mm-hmm.
Tickle fight.
Tickle fight.
Yeah.
Okay. Then my answer is to leave.
I
don't want to be part of your tickle fight.
I suppose I can come up with it. I think here we are, the three of us, hanging out together. And I think that's what I hope comes out of today is I feel like I know you both pretty well.
But mm-hmm.
Maybe somehow magically we'll get to know each other a little bit better somehow. And I'm just saying a tickle fight. Could possibly accomplish that.
That's one of the ways that it could accomplish your goal.
It definitely is.
My answer would be similar in that I just wanted to hang out with you guys.
What I want out of this time is to just listen to you guys talk about your friendship and to get an idea, not only for people listening, but for myself, just about how friendship and like really deep, intentional friendship is the kind of connection that not only gives us something good to shoot for, but it's going to, you know, meet those needs that a lot of times we've looked to other things to do. So, I'm just really excited about our time. So some of the people who are going to be listening to this already know who Andy Gullihorn and Gabe Scott are, but not everybody in the world does. And so for the benefit of the people who don't know you guys already, just take a second and catch us up on kind of who you are and what you do. And yeah, just help us get to know you a little bit. Andy, you go first.
All right. Well, I'm Andy Gullihorn, and I live in Nashville, Tennessee, from Texas originally. I moved here because I wanted to write songs for people, and I still do that some. But at some point in my career, I realized that other people aren't going to want to sing my songs, so I started singing them myself. And so a big part of what I do, like for my job, is traveling around and playing songs for people and found out that I love it. I have a wife here who's also an artist and a therapist. And I got three kids, only one left at home. So two in college and one in high school. But as far as the music stuff and my connection with you, Greg, I mean, you know this already, but a lot of my songs had what I would call therapeutic language in them. Probably mostly because I needed a lot of therapy. And then I would find that different therapists would use my songs in different contexts. And, you know, it could be a retreat or a conference or something. And then they would ask me to come play music there. And so the music has kind of opened doors for me to play my own music in spaces that are more therapeutic in nature. And that's how I met Greg.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
For people who are getting to know Awaken, one of the things that we offer is a men's intensive called the Roots Retreat, where we go pretty deep with men who are seeking recovery from unwanted sexual behavior, sexual addiction. And when we did our first one back in 2016, so like it's coming up on 8 years since we met, I knew that your music was going to be a lot of the soundtrack of that weekend, just because different touch points and subject matter that we were going to be addressing over the weekend, I could set it up just verbally, or I could set it up by playing this song. And having an artistic very concise 4-minute way of getting the point across of this is where we're going is so much better. And you know, music and art connects with both sides of our brain and it helps engage the emotions. So I knew I was going to play that. And I just kind of took a shot in the dark. And I think I just found your email address through your website and sent one. And you emailed back a couple of days later and said, yeah, let's do it. And so that's pretty cool. We are coming up on our 25th men's intensive in just a little, not too long after this is being recorded. And I think maybe you've missed two of them, been at all the rest. So it's just been a huge, great connection and friendship for me. So it's been awesome.
Me too.
Gabe, tell us a little bit about you.
My name is Gabe and my last name is Scott. Two first names. I grew up in Michigan and I escaped there at the age of 22. It's beautiful, but it tries to kill you about 6 months out of the year with cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I moved to Nashville and play music. Well, sometimes for a living. I guess sometimes it's not for a living. But I have been a...
For a living for quite some time, right?
Professional sideman. So... when I was younger and I had more energy, it meant that if somebody asked if I could play an instrument, I would lie to them and say yes. And then as quickly as I could raise enough money or save enough money to go buy the instrument, I would go buy it and
figure it out
and try to figure it out. Figure it out enough to fool them into thinking that I could play it. And then in the meantime, figure it out better.
Okay. Now the topic of today's conversation just shifted to honesty. Yeah. So.
But yeah, that's what I've, done professionally for quite some time and then got into producing records for other people, which was quite fun. But also I think for me, it kind of took over because I've got, I won't speak for Andy except for I'm about to. I think we both have a little bit of perfectionism that runs in our veins. And when you're working on anything that's subjective, you can be subjective with it for a really long time until it gets just right. So I lived in a studio room. Unlike Andy with two kids in college and one about to be, didn't get around to that until a little bit later in my marriage. And so, we have a 7-year-old, who's about to go to college as well.
She's very bright.
Yeah. So that's what kind of triggered for me, a little bit of a change, wanting to be able to be a little bit more present. Mm-hmm. So I did the obvious thing and opened a restaurant, which is, I can still laugh at that as well because that seems ridiculous.
So after
still,
what, 20, 25 years of, of doing music for a living, it seemed like a great idea to open a restaurant.
For some reason it did. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can tell you later why it seemed like a great idea, but I can tell you now, all the reasons why it's not a great idea. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you all the reasons from the standpoint of a person who eats there, why it was.
Thank you.
So we're talking about Lady Bird Taco. So if you live in or around Nashville or Birmingham, Lady Bird is a treat.
That's really all I wanted was to get a shout out. That's what I was kind of going for that whole time. Like, let's just get this out there.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay. I want to hear about y'all's friendship. How long have the two of you known each other?
I think the first time we met was, strangely enough, in Birmingham in 2000, maybe. There was a show. At that point, my wife had her first record come out in 1999, and I was just playing guitar for her on the road. And we were booked to play a show in Birmingham with Andrew Peterson. And I think Randall Goodgame was there, or Eric Peters, or maybe everybody. I don't know. I'm kind of like throwing everybody into the same boat. But Gabe was playing guitar and whatever other instruments he was lying about with Andrew Peterson. And so we, and that was our first time to meet Andrew as well. So we did this show. And I remembered just feeling like we'd kind of found our people in meeting them. Because we were kind of, I mean, the music is different. But at that point, the music industry was like really shifting into worship music. And we were all singer-songwriters. And it kind of felt like, well, we're kind of in this, I mean, Jill was in the Christian music world and Andrew was in the Christian music world, but it didn't really fit with whatever was happening in the Christian music world. And I just remember hitting it off right away. And then I think the second time we saw each other was either later that year or the next year at Everyone's Festival that Waterdeep put on.
Oh, yeah.
And we met for breakfast. And all I remember about that conversation is Gabe was always into technology, like cutting edge technology. And he was selling me on like this Palm Pilot thing that he had. And I was like, wait, you can like just enter stuff in a calendar on a digital thing in your hand? He's like, yeah, man, this is amazing.
With a stylus.
That's kind of like where we first met. And then not long after that, I mean, Gabe and Andrew kind of started working on what became Behold the Lamb of God Christmas tour with Andrew. They were working on songs and arranging stuff. And so that was 25 years ago. And Jill and I started traveling with the tour about 22, 23 years ago. So then every December, we'd be on a bus together for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then we'd see each other, you know, at Nashville, just kind of randomly running the same circles. But we always just kind of love spending time together, especially on the Christmas tour. We would just, we're both competitive. I would say athletic, but I'd say we were athletic compared to most musicians. That's a pretty low bar.
Athletic adjacent.
Yeah. It's like we're musician athletic, which means, I don't know, we can touch our toes sometimes. But yeah, so we just enjoyed goofing around on Christmas tour, and then we'd play racquetball on occasion. And so the friendship kind of grew from there. I just totally took over that whole answer.
Oh, I love it, man.
Yeah. Anything to add? What was it? Well, what do you remember about those first early days?
I don't, but I would just say that what I do know is that when you're on a tour bus, a lot of living can happen on a tour bus because you're in very small quarters with a lot of people.
Mm.
So it's not quote unquote normal, like, hey, we're hanging out together. I mean, you're truly forced makes it sound bad. I don't mean that way, but you're forced to really be in close quarters with other human beings and figure out how to make that as smooth as you can and have fun. And so even though a Christmas tour might be 3.5 weeks, there's a lot of, bonding that can happen in 3.5 weeks on the tour bus,
right?
You know, playing on a stage together.
Yeah. So it's, for sure.
It's pretty concentrated.
Yep.
I'm going to ask about the high five in a few minutes. And you know, for our listeners who don't know what that is, it's going to be a really cool part of the story. Prior to the start of the high five, do you remember a time when like you felt like, compared to other friendships, that yours together was sort of just, it was different. It was deeper, or, you know, one that had a little bit more to it than some of the other relationships in your life?
Well, the interesting thing, I mean, it certainly felt that way on the Christmas tour. And practically what that looked like is, I mean, really everybody on that tour, one of the great things about that tour is everybody is just easy to get along with and is friendly. Yeah. And we all just love being with each other.
Mm.
But it would look like late nights, really, you know, the electronic version of Catchphrase.
Yeah.
So it would be like people are going to bed like at 11 and we're sitting in the back, and there might be like, you know, five people sitting back there. We're like, let's just see how many, we're all on the same team. Let's see how many we can get through. You know, like can we get to like six before the time runs out? And there'd always be somebody who's kind of slow and tired and not good at giving clues. And then as they would start going to bed, we'd be like, as soon as they're done, we're like, all right, let's get to like, let's see if we can get to 11. And, you know, we'd be there till like 3 or 4 in the morning. So that's kind of like, you know, what that looked like. But I would say before the high five started, we love spending time together, but we also have like, we're both really lucky to have a lot of rich friendships.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, it could go easily months and we'd never talk to each other.
Yep.
But when we did talk to each other, it was like, oh, I love spending time with you. And I don't know if it's just Nashville or the fact that you have these times where you have these concentrated times with different people on the road where you feel like really close to them and you feel like you can trust them. And if you had more time, you'd be good friends. That's kind of what it felt like. I can't remember us, you know, we would play racquetball together on occasion and we always just loved it. But the intention was like, oh, if we ever had more time to spend together, that would be awesome.
We could play another game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Racquetball, badminton, you name it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at some point, an idea came to you and it involved intentionality. It's like, hey, we see each other for 3.5 weeks and spend all this time together and we live really close, right? I mean, I'm about to start telling the story, so I'm going to stop. What was it? First off, Andy, was it you or Gabe, was it you who kind of broached that subject of let's introduce something else into our friendship to make sure that we don't go months without talking to each other?
It was the Andy. Yeah.
It was the Andy.
Well, I did one small thing, which was move. I can't say that
you moved a lot closer.
The reason
right?
why I moved where we moved, but yeah.
Yeah, you can say it now. You can pretend.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to be closer to Andy.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved.
The funny thing is thinking about how close we are now. When I found out that he moved, I guess you had been there for months already. Yeah. So I was like, mm-hmm. I didn't even know that you moved close to me. I mean, we had definitely said a number of times, oh, let's try to find a way to spend more time together regularly. And it sometimes would happen with racquetball or something, but it just wasn't as consistent. So the idea of the intentionality was really just kind of off the top of my head when we were at a party and our wives were talking about some episode of CBS Sunday Morning, and Gabe and I were having our normal, we're just goofing off and talking about, man, we should play racquetball or we should, you know, whatever. And then in that conversation, I found out that he moved 1.5 miles from me. And I just said, I think I know how we can spend more time together and one day get on our wife's favorite TV show. And I just said, what if I text you on Wednesday and you start walking towards my house and I'll start walking towards it? Because I think we were pulling up the map to see where you lived. And I was like, what if we start walking towards each other?
Because there's a park right in the middle.
Well, we didn't know.
Yeah.
We're just like, we'll go halfway and then just give each other a high five and then walk back home. And I remember saying, if we do that for 10 years every week, that's the kind of story they would do on CBS Sunday Morning. And
make our wives happy.
Yeah. Because it really makes them happy that we do that every week. No. So, yeah. So it's just kind of like, I mean, kind of halfway putting it out there as a joke. And Gabe was like, yeah, let's do it. So, you know, I never thought that, I mean, I guess I didn't think that we wouldn't do it for 10 years, but I never thought of it that way, really, other than making the joke about CBS Sunday Morning. I was just like, oh, let's try this and see what happens. And so we did that first Wednesday, and it happened to be at Sevier Park in Nashville. And we've been doing that ever since, every week.
Mm-hmm. And the ever since is just about to get to what length of time?
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah. So this is being recorded.
That's called a decade.
Yeah.
A decade, which makes it sound even better.
Yeah. This is being recorded shortly before 10 years. But I believe if the schedule works out the way I think it is, this episode's actually going to drop on the day, the 10-year anniversary of the high five. Oh, so
yeah. April 30th?
So if you're listening to this and it's April 30th, then yeah, that was intentional. If it didn't work out, then sorry. Yeah.
You remember April 30th?
Yeah.
See you next decade.
Probably most people who will listen to this after April 30th. So I'm just going to go ahead and tell you this loaded on April 30th.
Okay, there you go.
So that first time, you know, you said, we're just going to come 3/4 mile each, give each other a high five, and then we can go home. Is that what happened the first time?
We gave a high five, and then we stood there and talked for like 2.5 hours. Mm. And then we're like, that might be harder to do. It's funny thinking like, oh, 2.5 hours, we can't pull that off every week. then it kind of progressed to like, I would bring a basketball and we would shoot free throws and three pointers. We had a little game. And so we kind of talked for 15 minutes or 20 minutes while we shot baskets. And then we'd go back home.
Because it turned out the middle point was indeed in front of the rec center.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were just talking the other day, but maybe this is too much of a side comment, but how different our lives would be, even if the middle point, if there was a different route, like if we went 9th Avenue instead of 10th Avenue, you know, we'd be standing in front of some house somewhere and maybe just talk for 10 minutes and go back home. Or, but actually we landed in front of this community center, and actually the community center is a big part of our lives as well.
So have you guys, with 10 years coming up, have y'all talked about, are you going to keep this going? Has there been any discussion about that? Because the original statement was, what if we did this for 10 years and you're almost there? Has anybody even thought about that?
I don't think we've talked about not doing it anymore.
Yeah, I was going to tell you.
Oh, shoot. Thanks, Greg.
Sometimes it's better to get bad news with another person in the room.
Yeah, and other people listening.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see, there's, I mean, we're not going to stop. There's, it actually was never really about the 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of a funny thing to say, and it was something that I said when we first started it. I hope it happens until one of us moves somewhere
moves on?
Else.
Oh, I thought you said until one of us moves on.
Until one of us dies.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you said it's not really about the 10 years. That I would like for that to be more than just like a throwaway thing that you said, because I think it's important. Like, was it about the goal or the outcome, or was it about what setting that kind of random time goal just kind of put in front of you to do? And then was the experience like, oh gosh, like I don't want to do this today, but I got to keep this streak alive for 10 years? Or did that just all of a sudden not be a thing? The reason why I think that's important is because, you know, in a recovery context, there's a lot of focus that goes into counting days, counting months, counting years. And that can either be just a helpful thing to notice that can help you remember the progress that's being made in your life and the way that God is showing up with you as a marker, or it can become a source of intense pressure, right?
Yeah.
And so to say it's not really about the 10 years, like, I think there's even something there to think about. When we set out on this idea, letting ourselves go into it with an openness that, like, okay, this is what we maybe envisioned it was going to be, but now we can see that there's something of much greater value than any kind of a arbitrary or random time frame.
Yeah, I think it's intentionality. At least I'll speak for myself. That's the theme, is I'm going to do something on purpose that turns out to have a lot of meaning to me, even if the cover of the book seems silly. Like it did the first time we did it. Like, what are we doing? Grown men with other responsibilities, walking and taking quite a bit of time to go give each other a high five for what? I don't know. Let's see.
Yeah.
And
then later,
that's beautiful to me.
And then later you did see.
Yeah.
Very tangibly.
Yes.
So I want to kind of pivot a little bit, because earlier I asked you what you remember about meeting Andy, and you said nothing. And people might have just thought that was you being funny or cute, but that's a real answer.
Yeah. I mean, truly, Andy is just very generic.
Forgettable. So
yeah. Thanks for circling back around to that. Yeah. Thank you.
But no, I want you to talk a little bit about what happened in the fall of 2020.
Yeah.
Because that and your friendship and the high five, all of those had a pretty serious intersection.
Yeah. It all ties in.
A few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the year 2020. A fantastic year.
When nothing else was happening.
For the entire human race. Yeah. That's when we were chasing down getting our restaurant open.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, scheduled to open, and then a worldwide pandemic happened. And so it got delayed, and then we eventually opened, and it's...
Am I remembering right that lockdown started the week you were supposed to open?
Yeah, it was... I don't remember the exact details, but it was right in there. Yeah. I mean, and there was the news break that there was something happening somewhere else in the world, that there was a problem, was 4 weeks out from opening. Mm-hmm. And then by the time it entered the world as a problem, it also entered my world as a pretty serious problem, chasing down this trade that I had never done before.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not saying don't do it, but if you can possibly try something new, don't do it if you have any indication of a pandemic happening.
Because it's hard enough.
It is, yeah.
If everything goes right.
That's right.
Yeah.
All that to say, we end up opening, and it's, when I say we open, it just means people can walk up to the front of our store because nobody could come in.
Mm.
Andy and a handful of friends, but I don't know why this is so funny to me still, but it is, even though it's not, because the pandemic was bad for a lot of people. But it sort of caused or gave an opportunity for weird things to happen, like my buddy Andy coming in and working at a taco shop for free. I don't even know if you got free tacos, but jumping in and like a small community making this thing happen, which that can happen in lots of beautiful ways. This is just one, and it's maybe can be dorky too, but it was a huge change in my life and it was horribly timed. And then to see the people that you love and that love you step in and try to keep it alive, because it wasn't easy. I mean, that's a really, really bad timing to introduce something new to a community when nobody can get close to each other. We were about 3 months into that. And I say that just because I've learned to say that. It's a crazy lead up, which is that I don't remember any of this.
Yeah.
Just relearn the story. But so correct me if I've gotten
you know wrong. That it happened because of what you're told.
Yeah. But a few months in, I started feeling weird and like sick weird and tired weird and confused weird. Thought maybe it was this thing back then that we called the coronavirus because they didn't know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm just tired because I'm a musician who opened a restaurant. Anyways, it
turns out it wasn't either.
Turned out it wasn't that. Yeah. And it ended up being pretty, pretty crazy and pretty scary. And I ended up getting an infection in my brain from, it's called HSV1, the cold sore virus, mm-hmm. which lives in most of us, but it lies dormant.
And usually doesn't attack your brain, right?
It usually attacks your lips. I've never had one on my lip, but for some reason it decided I want Gabe's brain. So, well, it got it, intimately. It goes to your brain. It went to my brain and it wreaks quite a bit of havoc and it causes your brain to swell, which causes even more damage. All that to say, I end up in the hospital. They're trying to sort through what it is. Thank goodness there was a doctor there who thought I'm going to test him for this.
Mm.
So he did, and it came back positive and they were able to start treating me immediately, which saved my life. So wow. I don't remember the exact details, but you know, it's like 24 to 48 hours. I probably would have died. So without them treating it. So they did that. The swelling comes down, you know, life is normal again, except it's not, cause it did a lot of damage in my brain. And for me, that has mostly come down to being epileptic now, which is what it is. I take medicine for it. But it destroyed most of my memory of my life.
And when you say of my life, you're not exaggerating.
Yeah, I'm really not. It's not all gone. I remember, like, the beauty is I remember people. Not always their names, but like I remember my parents. I remember my brother. I remember a handful of things about growing up. But there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to what is remembered and what's not. But there is some stuff there.
But lots of events that went away haven't come back, right?
Including the fact that I had decided to open a restaurant. It was like my wife telling me, yeah, you know, we have a restaurant just down the street. And I thought they were playing a prank on me because they had done that a few times. Friends and my wife telling me that. Well, whatever, that I'd been married multiple times. And
that's not nice. was Andy one who did that?
I'll let him decide.
Okay.
That being said, that wasn't easy. That was super hard. Mm. And, but the extremely hard part for me to this day, to this moment right now, is that there's still, my short-term memory is really messed up. So hanging on to what has happened last week is there's not much that remains, or at least that I could say happened then. I might say it was a year ago and it was last week or vice versa. I just had a conversation with my wife last night about it. Not like trying to decide, do you own, when you're talking to somebody, why don't you just own the situation and say, yeah, I don't remember what you're talking about. And it's tricky. And I suppose I don't think this is something I would have thought a whole lot about if I hadn't gone through this illness. Maybe I would have. Maybe everybody does, but I'm assuming they don't. Mm. And I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have. Which is, you know, lying's a bad thing. That's what I've heard. But for me, in a moment where I'm, especially in a public place like a restaurant where people are talking to me, and I might recognize their face or I might even know their name, but they start telling me a story or reminiscing, and it's like, do I stop them and say, yeah, I don't remember this? Mm. Or do I just let them tell the story, which is what I do most often, and laugh along and smile along and move on with the day? And part of that a big part of that is probably my nineness on the Enneagram, which is that it's for me, it's just easier to go along instead of making a deal out of it. Mm-hmm. That might make them feel awkward. I'm fine being the only one who feels awkward because it's quite exhausting.
Boy, that introduces a lot of things that people don't know that are going on in your head.
Yeah.
In real-time conversations.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's weird. And then please, in about 10 seconds, somebody kick me under this table and we can stop talking about my brain. Andy is setting his timer. Ready, set,
go.
Go. Oh, I forgot what I was going to say.
That's just another problem.
Just kidding. It's that the brain is this remarkable thing. And we talk about our heart a lot when we talk about fuzzy things or even God or even marriage or relationship or sex. We talk about our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it works, but my new perspective is it's our brains. So why don't we switch and start saying, oh, God, I love you with all my brain. Because it is a remarkable thing that almost no human understands much about. And even the ones who know the very most about this thing on top of our shoulders, I've gotten to have a personal experience and chat with one of the most renowned mm-hmm. brain people on planet Earth, who off record said, I know almost nothing about the brain, that it's truly a magical thing that we don't understand how it works.
Super mysterious.
Why do you remember everything?
Yeah.
Why did I before? And a million other things.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is we don't know. And what I love about that for all of us is that regardless of what label we want to put on it, religion or otherwise, it's magic. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. And here we are for however long we're here, and let's go.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's make it matter. Make it count.
Yeah.
One of my favorite it's not that new now, but just this thought that being in the moment, make it matter. So right mm-hmm. now it's the three of us. Let's get the most out of this that we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We don't have the time. We can pretend that we do, but we don't have the time to concern ourselves with, you spoke to it even earlier, how we can fall into a habit of looking back a long ways in time and thinking like, oh, well, we've accomplished this, this, and this. And over the next 5 years, we're going to do this, this, and this. And those are all wonderful things
mm-hmm.
to use as a framework. But when they become more than just a framework for your day, I'm in a place now where I can clearly say, oops, that's a mistake. Because all you have is right this second.
Mm.
So give it everything you've got, even if you're talking into a microphone with a couple of dudes, but make it matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is what makes the, finally getting back on topic, makes something like the high five so special and important.
Well, and this is an important thing too. I mean, yes, we'll get back on the high five topic, but this, we really haven't gotten off of it because it was a small thing that turned into a really big, deep thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of us function and feel like we do have a lot of time to waste. I'll just get to that later.
Yep.
But you know firsthand, there might not be a later.
Yep.
And that's not just true of you because of what you went through. That's true of everybody.
That's right.
There's a visceral experiential way in which that was proven to you.
Yeah.
And probably to you too, Andy, just watching it happen, right? Because I know that back before he even got to the hospital, you got a phone call from Gabe's wife, Keely, that something's wrong. Mm. So I mean, what was that experience like for you as the one who wasn't going through it as the patient, but you were going through it as a close friend?
Well, this is the first time I've actually thought about this aspect of it, but at the point when Gabe did get sick, without the high five, I wouldn't be the person that Keely called.
Mm.
I mean, Gabe has so many people that love him, so many close friends, and there are probably a million people that she could have called.
Mm.
But the reason why mm-hmm. she called me is because of what we had built
mm-hmm.
at that point. It was like six and a half years of doing the high five every week. So then we were already family by that point. So Keely and I took him to the hospital, and it was really, Gabe wasn't exaggerating saying that like if it was another 24, 48 hours, he might have died. It was really scary. But yeah, getting him to the hospital, and once they got him on antibiotics for the virus, things were improving for sure. But you weren't sure, I mean, who knows what it was going to look like on the other side of it. And it was pretty scary. And the first night I stayed up there, it might've been the second night. And I remember that a couple of things is that he didn't sound like himself. Like even your voice sounded different. It was it was almost like, you trying to sound assured of what you're talking about. So your voice was kind of louder. It's like, "Hey, Andy. Yeah. My day is great." You know, that kind of like, I don't know who's inside of you right now, but, and it would be like the brain. It's like the brain was healing or trying to heal. And it just like coming up with anything it could to say, to make it sound like, you know, I think we've talked about this, but like, I was like, "Well, how was your day today?" He's like, "Oh, good. My brother and I were selling hot dogs at the hot dogs." I mean, stuff like that. It was just kind of like, yeah. Okay, I don't think you were selling hot dogs outside, but. And then the nurses would come in and they'd be like, "Mr. Scott, did you take your medicine?" "Oh, yes, I already had the medicine." And I'd go out and be like, "Hey, he has no clue what he's talking about. Don't listen to him when he talks about, you know." But just like 2 days later or one day later, I was back in there and he sounded like himself. Mm-hmm. I remember you asked about Drew, my oldest, who was just going to college. He had just gone to college. So like he was remembering things. But the short term was still shot. And there were a lot of things, like Gabe was saying earlier, it wasn't that there was like no access to memory. It's just like you have no control over what you can access. And there wasn't a whole lot of access to it.
Well, one of the things that was shot that you found out because you asked about it was the high five, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That day I remember saying, "Wait, do you remember about the high five?" Because at that point, like I said, it had been 6.5 years. We had talked about it on podcasts. We had podcasters walk with us and interview us on the walk. Mm-hmm. We already had our high five shirts.
You've done it more than 300 times by this point.
Yes. Yeah. And he didn't know what I was talking about.
What was that like for you? Mm. When you asked him and he didn't remember, what did that feel? Do you remember what that felt like?
What I want to say, it wasn't surprising. In that moment, it's seeing the days leading up to this. And it was kind of like, oh, that's, looking back, I can imagine it felt like, oh, I wonder if that's ever going to be, if that's just never going to happen again, mm-hmm. If that season is just over. But my gut in remembering is like, it wasn't more sad than anything else. To me, and it wasn't like, oh, wait, you don't remember the high five? It was just kind of like, oh, it was all hard. Mm-hmm. And the high five wasn't like some important thing was like more important than any of the other things that he couldn't remember.
Well, yeah, but I can just see myself totally ignoring whatever that would make me feel because I would rationalize that there are so many bigger fish to fry.
Totally.
Right. And so like, well, oh, that makes sense. Well, of course, you don't remember anything else. Why do you remember the high five? I don't know. I can't speak for you, but I think for me, that might have been kind of a subconscious strategy to not really feel how, because I feel like for me, that would be grieving. Like it would feel like something, you know, that I'd been sharing for 6.5 years is just gone in the other person's life. And who knows if it's coming back. And I'm not trying to force you to say, yes, I felt that. Because if you didn't, you didn't. But
right. I think there's... It would have crossed my mind like, oh, maybe the high five run is over. Mm. But really on the flip side of it, if you think about it, he's asking me about my son going to college and he was like engaging about that kind of stuff. So like what the high five represented was this relationship, like a connection that we had. And I felt like the connection was there. And if that was because of the high five or not, then it was like, oh, the high five isn't as important as like the way that Gabe would describe it, especially in the early days. He might not remember things, but he would really remember the essence of relationships and people. And I was like, and that I could have a sense that that was still there.
So not only is it not about the 10 years, but now in a sense, it's not even about the high five.
Well, the high five was just about the connection and spending time together. Yeah. So we had that. And so if the high five died at 6.5 years,
the friendship didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't, it was a tool for us to spend time together. And that's all it is. It was a tool to do that. And mm-hmm. and so the relationship was still there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really think that's how I felt.
But ultimately, you found out later that it didn't die. Yeah. Tell us about that day in Gabe's hospital room.
Well, I should say that, you know, over the years...
The evolution of the high
five. Evolution, you know, it had changed a little bit in that... I mean, we still send each other the same emojis and leave. You know, we send each other... One of us sends, like, the high five or the hand, and the other one sends it, and then we send... a person walking, the other person sends a person walking, and that's when we start. And Gabe added, he's always wanted to add things to the high five, but he added a clap and a snap before you do the high five at some point. I don't know what, maybe a couple years in. And anyway, so that next morning that I was there in the hospital with him, and I had asked him the day before if he remembered about the high five, and he said no. Mm-hmm. He got up to go use the restroom, which, by the way, you know, when you're full of IVs, you pee for like 3 minutes. It was
impressive.
It was just emasculating me sitting there listening to it. I was just like, oh my gosh. I'm in awe.
That is some substantial volume. Yeah, there.
Yeah. I think it was just like a steady stream. Anyways, I was like, you know, I've been keeping track of, you know, both of us just making sure that every week at some point we would do the high five. And it occurred to me that, well, we hadn't done the high five. I mean, the week started on Monday. That's when he went in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So I just told him, hey, on your way back from the bathroom, I just need you to give me a high five. He's like, okay. And he didn't understand it, but he's game
probably
for
didn't
whatever.
Even remember the conversation from the day before about it. Oh, right?
No, definitely yeah. didn't. But, you know, he's always game for it. That's his nature. You just say, hey, you want to do something stupid? He's like, yeah, sure, I want to do it. So he was walking back towards me, and he had his little tower of IVs next to him on the wheels, you know. And I was just going for the high five, mm-hmm. but he did the clap and the snap before he gave me the high five, which sounds so whatever. I don't know. It is what it is. But to me, what it represented was like, oh, there's my buddy. Like all this time that we've invested together of just like showing up week after week, it's like, in his body.
Yeah, it's woven into
his
body.
It's part of who he actually is.
And yours too.
Yeah, mine too. And it was a symbol of how deep it felt. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's hard to say, oh, I do this high five and it feels really deep. And everybody's like, oh, okay, so you walk. Okay, that sounds interesting, whatever. But it was just a symbol that it had been and still is changing me mm-hmm. a little bit at a time, like 1 week at a time. Very incrementally, but then you get 6.5 years down the road and it is like, it's more powerful than the things you can or can't remember. Mm. It's just like a part of you and it just comes out. So it changes the way that you interact with the world and it changed the way that we interact with each other. So I don't know. That was just a moment that showed me one of the many benefits mm-hmm. of showing up week after week and doing the same thing over and over again.
I feel like, and I haven't been keeping a tally in my head, but I feel like since we started talking about the high five today, there have been several instances of silly or, you know, ridiculous or stupid, you know, just ways of describing it in a lighthearted way. Like a lot of people wouldn't get this. And probably there are some people listening who, if they're being honest, might say, yeah, that does seem kind of silly. But I bet you that there are people who are listening and thinking, man, I want to have a friendship with elements of it like that. And mm-hmm. and I'm guessing that there are probably people listening who are feeling some sadness because they would say, I don't think I have somebody who would share that kind of intentionality with me. Mm-hmm. And it could be that that's maybe one of the reasons why we run to other things, because the need to have that, I think, is in all of us. I think everybody needs to have something in their friendship or friendships that has the amount of thought and has the amount of depth that's woven into you as a person that y'all have been describing. But whether it's just hurry or whether, you know, whatever reason or reasons, we don't have that. But I feel like our systems know that we need it. And so I don't think it's silly at all to spend this much time talking about a ritual that on its surface could look pretty silly, right? Because, I mean, there was a key experience, Gabe, for you 3.5 years ago that everything that had led up to that point was a part of you coming back from it, I would imagine. Is that's not an overstatement?
It's not.
So I want to flip it around just for a second before we get off of this and ask you, Andy, Gabe's story about his medical crisis is, it's very easy to talk about, right? It's very tangible. We can say this happened and your presence, your friendship, the culmination of what y'all have been working on for all these years showed up in a very obvious way. Have you noticed, or can you think of times in your life when you were in a season or going through some kind of an event where what you had with Gabe helped carry you through?
Oh, 100%. And I was thinking about, this is tying to what you were talking about, people wanting that depth of relationship. I think for a lot of years, I thought to have depth in relationship meant, well, it better be a Bible study or be something really serious. Like it better be, you know, a therapy processing group or whatever. And I never...
All of which are great.
Yeah, those are great. But like, to me, finding depth, like it just didn't have to come that way. Mm-hmm. Like it's just like following something that we both thought was fun to do and just kind of like, hey, this is kind of goofy. Let's do this. And then, you know, it's turned into other things. Like we play badminton every week together. And that doesn't sound very deep, but it creates this foundation for maybe once every three or four times that we give a high five, it'll be like, hey man, I really need to talk about what's going on. Or there's just something hard that I need to process. Mm-hmm. And so it's like the foundation is there because we're doing things that we love, that if it needs to go, it's not actually switching gears to go deep. Mm. We could be having like a heart-wrenching, tear-filled conversation and then jump up and play a badminton game and then come back and get right back in the conversation. It's kind of like it's choosing to swim in a water where all of that is welcome.
Yeah.
But it's been that way for a long time. So I remember when, I mean, obviously Gabe coming out of the hospital and the recovery from encephalitis was pretty intense, and there's still recovery from encephalitis. But, you know, I think there were times where he was feeling like, oh man, because he's a pretty self-sufficient guy. He picked up instruments that he didn't know how to play, and he knew how to do things. Mm-hmm. And here he was in a place where he had to be needy. He had to rely on other people for all kinds of things. And I think sometimes you felt like you were a burden to the friends and family around you because you needed someone to walk with you so that you remembered how to get back home.
Yep.
You know, like he felt like he didn't like being, I wouldn't like that either. We're both like nines on the Enneagram. We don't want to bother anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But what I kept telling Gabe, I was like, man, there have been so many times in my life where I'm going through something and I needed help and I had to ask for help. And he gave me help. I mean, like he was there for me so many times. And I'm like, that's what friendship is. There are seasons where I'm not going to be able to carry anything and you might have to carry me. So to give it back is an honor. I'm not doing it because I owe him something,
mm-hmm.
but like, yeah, there are just times when I was just way more needy
mm-hmm.
and I just needed help. And sometimes that was just a listening ear. Sometimes it was just like silence, just like shooting baskets together. Sometimes shooting baskets or playing badminton was like therapy to me to be able to have a friend that could do something with me that reinforced the fact that like, maybe just shooting baskets together or playing badminton together was a way of saying, I'm not afraid of who you are or ashamed of who you are, or you're still worthy of hanging out with, you know, which sounds like a really simple message, but.
And I'll just be here with you.
Yeah.
And if and when you're ready to talk about something else, I'll be here for that too.
100%. So it's just kind of like, I knew that I could call any time of the day, or if I just needed to vent about something, he'd be there to hear it. And that happened so many times. And that's just kind of the nature of a friendship. It's mm-hmm. kind of like there are, so that when he was in a space where he was technically, you know, quote, more needy of attention and care, it just felt like, oh yeah, that's...
It's your turn.
Yeah. Happy to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not the only one who felt that way. I mean, if you could see the network of people that Gabe has poured his life into over the years, I mean... Years and years, decades, not just like doing things, but just like genuinely caring about people. And I definitely felt that from him.
Yeah.
Man, I need to do these podcasts more often. That felt good.
I bet. And I mean, it felt good for me for you. Yeah. And it's consistent with how I've known you too. Thinking back, Andy, to something you said a few minutes ago about, it's not a Bible study or an accountability group or, there is value in those things. But like in my experience, it has been and would be very easy for me to show up for a Bible study, go through the material, and then think that I did the thing that I was here for. Right.
Right.
And to leave without really making a deeper connection, which might have ought to have been the primary reason why I was there. And maybe the teaching or the study was what facilitated those other moments. Mm. Right. And for me, it would be easier to miss out on something deeper because the thing that happened being a Bible study would seem like it's enough and sufficient. You know, and I'm not trying to get people to comment on like me undervaluing Bible study because that's not what I'm saying. But you could do the same thing with badminton, right? You could show up for a badminton game and think, well, that's what I'm here for. But what I hear you describing is that's what's getting us both to this particular spot. But how much of that being why we're here remains to be seen.
Right. Right?
And we have an openness to just like badminton, we'll push pause on that. We'll get back to it later if something else shows itself to be more important.
Right.
Because connecting relationally is certainly not inconsistent with the Bible.
Right.
You know, it's sometimes a practically much more way of understanding what the Bible says about relationships than actually reading a verse about it in that moment.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because we've already done that. And so we know in our head that that's a good thing. But then when we experience it, because we prioritize that, that sometimes I think is the missing piece.
Totally. You go ahead.
It's interesting here. I love what you just said, Greg. It's like, I don't really remember much about the Bible either. Mm. And it's hard for me to read things and retain them. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the beautiful things that I've been able to see in a new light is exactly what you're talking about. That church isn't just on Sundays. Mm. With the same people that you see every week. It's bigger than that. And for me, it turns out that love and loving others, it can be something as simple as listening to each other through good times and bad times. Mm-hmm. And doing that with any human that you happen to be around in this moment, whether you know them or you don't know them, being willing to be with somebody wherever they are, even if it's ugly, it's not just helpful for them. It's helpful for the person sitting with them. Mm-hmm. So when Andy just told the story about that, I've been there for him. It's like, oh goodness. And he's been there for me. That feeds a connection in both directions, in both situations. It is so not a one-way street. Even in a taco shop, getting to be around people that I quite often don't know, it's beautiful for me to see that folks are so hungry and they're not raising their hand to say it. But when you actually pay attention to them or you ask them how they're doing and you mean it, I think our voices change. There's something to it.
They can tell.
They can tell. And, yeah. And something as simple as how you're doing when it comes from your heart can truly impact somebody's day. And going back to what I just said, when you're impacting somebody's day, it goes both ways.
Right.
You're impacting your own in a positive way in connecting with other human beings, which I just can't imagine anymore. I can't imagine anything that's more, not even just satisfying, but something that's more uplifting, something that's more encouraging in life. So much more than a lot more than the other things that we chase down to try and fill that void.
You said that there's a lot of things that you don't remember about the Bible.
Yeah.
That's another after effect of what happened to you.
Yeah.
It's funny because as you're talking, I'm thinking about how you didn't remember the high five and yet your body did because it was in your fiber.
Yep.
But what you're describing, there's a lot of Bible in you.
Yes.
You know, whether you can remember chapter and verse. And to me, that's really super encouraging. So as we're getting ready to finish this conversation, the thought of which makes me a little sad, because this has been great. I'm thinking about people who are listening who maybe what they're feeling right now is either envious or sad because they've been hearing you guys talk for a while now about your friendship and they're thinking, I don't have that. And they want that. And maybe some of the people who are listening have looked for that and tried to find it. I don't know what's kept that from being something that they've found. You know, it could be a number of things, but I can't imagine that you guys got in your friendship to the place where you are today without it requiring something of you and costing something. Like, you don't just fall accidentally into a friendship that's become as deep as yours. You know, use the word intentionality to describe the high five, but like, what's the risky part of really pursuing a deeper friendship? Well, like, what does it require? What does it cost? What has it for you guys?
I think there's certainly a level of vulnerability where I haven't felt this way in a long time, but I remember times of being like, oh, I wonder if he doesn't really want to do the high five. He's busy. Mm. Maybe he's just doing it to be nice. You know, like thoughts like that. I say I haven't thought that in a long time just because I don't care if he's just doing it to be nice. I still enjoy it. It doesn't matter.
It's okay with you.
Yeah.
Oh, phew. I can relax now.
But yeah, I think I would recognize that fear of putting yourself out there saying, hey, I want to be available to you. If you're like, there's something vulnerable about it because what if they don't feel the same way back or it's not as important to them? And that's just, to me, that's just part of the recipe. And unfortunately, you might have to try this different times and you might get burned different times. I'm really lucky that Gabe and I are real similar personality-wise and we have a lot of interests that are alike. And I would say if somebody's out there thinking, man, I wish I had that and I don't, I'd say a couple of things. One, I would say to start really small. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It doesn't even have to be walking a mile and a half. It could be just start really small. But also, I think particularly people who grew up in the church, you know, we're talking about Bible studies or whatever, which I'm not dissing on that. But a lot of times we feel like that has to be the center of everything in order to justify the time that you spend on it.
Wow.
And so I think if you might go in like, okay, I need to find a person who believes the same things that I believe about this and this and this and whatever. And it's like, I would say instead of that, start thinking about what you love to do. This friendship wasn't born out of like similar ideas. It's just like, hey, do you like to play racquetball? Do you want to play badminton? Do you want to go shoot baskets? Like to start there. And then the depth just comes, that just comes naturally because you're both engaging in something that like is engaging with your heart. Even if that's playing chess or mm-hmm. whatever it is, like to start with your passions and something that you would do, like it didn't feel like a chore to do it. Right. Because if we were like, hey, Gabe, well, I want to spend time together. Let's read through these books and do this workbook on whatever. Like I'd still love spending time with Gabe, but the tool itself to spend time with Gabe would be wearisome for me some days. But to play badminton, I actually look forward to playing badminton starting the minute I leave badminton the week before. So it's like, that's not a chore. So to find something that's like you would do regardless.
Yeah.
And find somebody who wants to join you there. So look at the passions and find, let that be an intersection. That, I don't know, that to me, unfortunately, particularly in the church, people think that that's kind of a selfish way to start a relationship.
Yeah, but when you think about it in the way you've just described and in a way that ended up in a song that you and Sky Peterson wrote, mm. you know, God is in the things we love, mm-hmm. so linger there a while. Mm-hmm. You know, just he's there.
Yeah.
If we believe that he's omnipresent, then he's there when you're playing badminton.
Yeah.
He's there when you're meeting at a coffee shop. Yeah.
Except on the days when Andy beats me.
So every day.
I put a huge underline under what Andy just said, you know, starting smaller, just something that you enjoy. All these years later, almost 10, I'm not kidding. I smile until I get in view of Andy, because I don't want him to see me grinning. But
then you put your scowl on.
It is still maybe the only part of me that is still childlike. There's something that feels otherworldly, like transcendent about that process of the whole thing. The I shouldn't be doing this right now because there are bigger priorities. Wrong. Because those other priorities don't make me feel like this.
Mm.
And this is so silly.
And if you don't let yourself feel like that, then how are you going to show up for those other priorities?
Yes. And it feels like a different kind of freedom going and doing this thing that maybe seems senseless, but means so much to me. There is joy in my heart. And if there's most days, if there's not joy, when I walk out of the house halfway there, there's an ounce of it. And it grows over the next, you know, couple hours as we swing rackets. As simple and silly as that might sound, it is so life-giving to me. And I think about it too. The second we stop, I'm thinking like, okay, well, next week.
Right. Man, to me, that right now, that stands in such stark contrast to my story when I would act out in my addiction. And when that was over, the first thought definitely wouldn't be, I can't wait to do that again.
Yeah, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah, I'm never doing this again. Why do I keep doing this? You know, this is awful. This isn't what I wanted. When we are doing the thing that our hearts and our souls really want to do, and we're finding that connection, the first thought is, man, how long before I get to do that again?
Yeah.
Wow.
And how weird is it there's a resistance to the things that we love to do? So it's like you think, I would think early on, it'd be like we would enjoy what would happen in the high five and be like, that was awesome. And feel like, I want to do that again. But then in the course of a week, it'd be like, oh, I've got so much stuff that I need to do. I got all this work I need to do. I don't know if I can fit this in, whatever. So there was resistance to doing it again. Whereas like what you're talking about with acting out, it's like as soon as you're done, you're like, I don't ever want to do that again. And it's like an opposite resistance. It's like this gravitational pull to escaping and to coping. And so it's just like choosing to do it over and over again until it becomes such a habit that it's in our bones and in our muscles. And then
and in our brain chemistry.
Yeah. And then you feel like, yeah, I don't have to justify doing this anymore. I love doing this and this is good for me. And I'm going to keep doing it.
Because like Gabe, even in your brain, which was compromised at the time, those neural pathways that had formed from 6.5 years of intentional, conditioned doing this over and over again, those didn't go away just because your access to them was not something that you were directly aware of.
That's right. Yeah.
They were still there. And so the resistance you're talking about, Andy, to doing this thing long enough to let it get conditioned that way. You know, we can look back on our bad habits and the things that become our compulsions and addictions, and we can see in retrospect how that happened. When we felt a need and we ran to the wrong thing, we did it enough times to where it just became automatic. Mm-hmm. Well, why couldn't that happen with the good things?
Right.
Well, because it costs vulnerability. Yeah. It costs honesty. And those are things that can scare us to death, but there's a payoff. Well, guys, gosh, this is, I love both of you guys very much. And I'm so thankful for my friendships with the two of you and that what you guys have, you both as people have space to let in other people, you know, and I'm glad to be not just an observer watching what y'all have had without getting to be the beneficiary of some of that love, you know. So thank you for being my friends.
Can I say something real quick?
Yes.
But I just want to say, Greg, you know, I've been able to be at so many of those Roots weekends, and I'm just grateful for the work that you're doing there in Birmingham. It's not just for people in Birmingham. People come to those from all over. But you have a great gift of creating space for people to heal. And I get to see it firsthand at these weekends. So since you don't have to do it, but if there are people out there that are looking for a connection, that's also something that like you create space for locally and online for people to have those kind of relationships and start to build something over time, but also for people to come to these weekends and really get healing. I've seen it firsthand so many times. So I just didn't want to like leave that off the table just to say the work that you're doing is the same thing that we're doing with the high five. It's for connection. It's like heading towards connection, being connected with your heart, being connected with your brain and being connected with what you love to do. So thanks for doing that work. And thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Thanks for saying so. Sure. Love you guys.
Love you.
Gosh, can you see why I love these guys so much? What a great conversation, great time spent with Andy and Gabe. You know, I hope that as you listened, this conversation has given you a desire to move yourself more deeply into real friendships with people that you can trust, people who you will allow to know all of you and who will love you well. And I know that can seem daunting if it isn't something that you've had in your life, but I just really hope and I pray and I encourage you to begin small, maybe find just one person that you could pursue and begin to spend some of that intentional type of time with, like Andy and Gabe were talking about. You know, if part of what makes it difficult for you to let yourself be known is a struggle that you have that's in the area where Awaken does our work, and that is with sexual brokenness, we would just really love it if you would reach out to us. In the show notes, you can find a link to our website where there's a contact page. You can send us a message and we'll get back with you very quickly. You know, we have online meetings for men and for women who struggle with unwanted or addictive sexual behavior, for women who are experiencing betrayal trauma because of things that their partner has done. We've got intensives and workshops called the Roots Retreat for men and women. And those are just incredible times of diving deeply into our stories to come to better understand kind of how we got to where we are today, which is super important if we have an idea of where we'd like to be. We've got to understand how we got here in the first place. But then also, if you are not in the area where we are, you know, we're in Birmingham, Alabama. We've got a meeting in Nashville, Tennessee. But if you live anywhere else, we can still help you. If you are looking for a therapist to work with and you don't know where to look in your area, reach out to us about that too. We have had a lot of experience in helping to kind of track down and give suggestions of coaches, counselors, therapists in your area that you could pursue potentially working with for that part of your journey. So whatever it is, we just hope that you'll reach out to us. And hope this podcast is an encouragement and a blessing to you, that it gives you a vision of what healthy connection could look like in your life. And if it does, keep listening. Every other Tuesday, we're going to be uploading a new conversation with someone to help us paint a clearer and broader picture of what it can look like to live in healthy connection and pursue what we really want. If the podcast helps you, we'd love for you to give it a 5-star rating and a review on whatever platform you listen to. And if you would ever be interested in supporting the work of Awaken, you can go to our website and find out ways to do that as well. But mostly, we just want to thank you for listening and hope that you'll be back for the next episode. Talk to you soon.